David Barno of American University, my guest, and studying the force of the future. And General, it's a pleasure to talk to you again. Secretary Carson, talking yesterday, and my colleague Jared Serber reporting on federalnewsradio.com about the progress that he will expect to make in the next 18 months on the force of the future structure. That 18-month deadline is really a deadline for Secretary Carson because January 20th, 2017, he's no longer in office. What's reasonable to expect that the Defense Department can do about the force structure and the progression of the force structure in the next 18 months? Thanks for joining me today, General.
You bet. Well, I know Acting Undersecretary Carson quite well, and he's the perfect person to lead this. He's energetic. He's smart. He's been in the Pentagon and the Army as the number two civilian there for almost a year, and spent time as a senior Army official before that. Two-term congressman from Oklahoma, you know, Rhodes Scholar, White House fellow. He's brilliant. He's innovative. He's energetic. He knows the system, and he knows what's got to be done. And 18 months is the right answer. So, you know, many projects in the Pentagon get started, and they get on a slow roll timeline, and the bureaucracy slows them down even further. And eventually, the folks who don't want to see any change at all simply outweigh, you know, the various actors. Mr. Carson's got a very short timeline here. In August, reporting out to his boss, Secretary of Defense Carter. And then Secretary Carter is going to have less than 18 months to get some key things implemented before he leaves. But he's candid as well, the Defense Secretary, Mr. Carter, in realizing that some of this is going to be the job of his successor. What they want to do is get this ball rolling and get some momentum built up. And this is the time to do it now. There's support from Congress. There's support inside the military. There's a lot of young men and women out there, including two of my sons, who are thinking about staying or leaving based upon what they see in terms of prospective change in the coming months. So it's an important time.
I was struck by some of the comments that Secretary Carson made yesterday that sounded similar to what civilian HR leaders are thinking about and talking about all across the government. He said yesterday, if someone wants to be a major doing cyber for 20 or 40 years, that's not permitted by statute or regulation. We should envision a world in which that's possible. I think a lot of people are afraid that if you get if you do away with up or out, you'll have people that hang around forever. And it sounds like Secretary Carson saying that's not necessarily a bad thing if they're doing the right things.
Well, I think it's time, just like it is happening in the private sector, it's time to customize the kinds of jobs to the kind of people we want having doing those jobs. We don't need someone who is a cyber expert, whether they're 25 or 35, necessarily to be able to carry a 70-pound backpack up mountains and crawl under barbed wire and do, you know, 50 push-ups in 2 minutes. Today, those kinds of standards are commonplace across, say, everyone who's in the Army, for example. That may not be the right kind of person for that job in the future. Maybe you probably want to open that aperture a bit and attract some folks who might not be interested in crawling under barbed wire but are the best cyber hackers in the world, and they want to do something for their country. So I think we're in an era now where fewer and fewer people in the military have to fundamentally be infantrymen at their roots and have to make all those qualifications to come in. We might want to think about that a little bit differently. We're going to need cyber warriors. We're going to need information operations specialists. We're going to need people that are terrific on Twitter to deal with ISIS and their Twitter campaign overseas. Those aren't the same kind of people we need to be infantry soldiers and, you know, ground foot Marines.
My colleague Jared spoke recently to Vice Admiral Bill Moran, the Chief of Naval Personnel. He reports that Secretary Mabus at the Navy has been probably the most outspoken of the force leaders to talk about the need for reform. And he's already working on a series of internal reforms there and has a list that he's sent to Congress of changes that he'd like to see. Is it your thought that perhaps Secretary Mabus is on the right track by starting his reforms, doing what he can do within the force, and then saying, in addition to these other things that potentially leaders in Congress might find appealing, here are some items that I'll need help from you?
Absolutely. He, you know, Secretary Mabus is out there pushing right to the limits of his authority, and he's got a huge amount of authority as the Secretary of the Navy. He's done everything from calling from, you know, one out of every four Marines ought to be women, where it's more like, you know, one out of 10 or one out of 12 today, to, you know, supporting the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Greenert's initiatives to reform his parts of the personnel system. The Navy is moving out on this, and there's a lot of enthusiasm for change inside the Navy. Admiral Moran, their Chief of Naval Personnel, who I know quite well, well from many, many years ago and have met with on this topic, they're leading the charge in a lot of ways with the other services. There's a couple other services that are close behind, so it's not, we shouldn't walk out of this thinking that nothing is happening out there. So there's actually a convergence right now of the services seeing there's a need, particularly the service chiefs, to change, Congress being supportive of changes, and now you've got leaders with Secretary Carter at the head of the Pentagon and then Undersecretary Carson leading this charge to make the wheels all work in the same direction. So this is the perfect time to get this effort done.
Lieutenant General Dave Barno, U.S. Army, retired, is a distinguished practitioner in residence at the School of International Service at American University. The takeaway from this initially was the 18-month issue that we've discussed already. The other issue is just culture change within the Pentagon. And as you mentioned, it can be a resistant organization to this kind of change. Will it take a unified push from all of these people that we've discussed and others to get this done? Or what's the secret to making sure that this is something that sticks well beyond when the folks that are in office now are in are leave office?
Well, a colleague of mine in the Pentagon yesterday in a meeting mentioned that there's four problems right now that the military personnel system seems to have. One is data. They don't know who's staying and who's leaving or what the quality is of those people. Number two is technology. They're not using modern technology to manage their force. Number three is the process. It's not much different than it was 25, 30, 35 years ago. The last one she mentioned was the culture. They have a culture problem. And there was general agreement around the table that the culture is the most important one to change. You've got to get people to buy into this. The young people on the force are bought into this, but they're not the leaders. I heard something earlier today that said that, you know, in 10 or 15 years, 98% of the military will be comprised of millennials, but the top 2%, the senior leaders, are still going to be folks from the next generation up, the Gen X crowd, who are going to be much older, not going to have the same outlook. So it's going to take a change to the military culture, really, to move this thing forward. And the Pentagon is a well-known, very resilient bureaucracy that fights change. And I've seen that in a number of my meetings on this topic in the Pentagon here in the last month or two.
Dave, the culture change that's required fits with a conversation that you and I have had on a number of occasions, and that's, what does it take to grow the next generation of excellent high-level, flag officer-level, general officer-level leaders, and what does it take to keep the people in the force that we want to take those jobs? How do you see this all fitting together, and what are the potential benefits to that effort that you've been pushing for such a long time?
I think one of the most important things that Secretary Carson's initiative is going to bring out there to the force is hope. You know, those young men and women out there, like my two sons, are going to be looking to see, is there any prospect for this changing, or am I going to have to live with the same process my dad did and my uncles and other people that are, you know, 40 years older than I am? Am I going to have to live with a 1968 or 1978 personnel process, or is it going to be actually listening to what I have to say? Is it going to be interested in what my skills are? Is it going to try and help me shape my future? Because I'm, you know, my contemporaries out there in the private sector are going from job to job every 2 years. They don't have any constraints on how rapidly they can move up if they're talented. They have the ability to step out of the workforce and do other things and come back. None of those things are easily achievable in the military today. So they're looking for some hope. They're looking for a signal that things are going to change. And this initiative with Brad Carson and with, you know, Secretary Carter as the Pentagon chief is probably the first big significant, you know, sign they've seen in decades. I've heard the term 40 years used. It's the biggest personnel initiative underway in 40 years. And that's going to provide a lot of hope out there to the young folks who are deciding to stay or leave.
The other dot that I think we should connect is the Military Compensation Retirement Modernization Commission. A lot of the issues that I heard Secretary Carson talk about yesterday fit with the 15 recommendations that commission made.
Exactly. I think that commission actually did a terrific job. Commissions in Washington are famous for having their results put up on a shelf and gather dust for decades and people not even remembering they existed, you know, years later. This commission did a terrific job, and the results have now been briefed to the service chiefs. I'm hearing that there's broad consensus about most of what the commission recommended, and that they're prepared in the Pentagon now to go to Congress, where there's also an unusual amount of support building to make some fundamental changes. One of those is portability of your retirement benefits. Today, unless you stay for 20 years in the military, where you get zero retirement benefits. And they're proposing having basically a 401k type system up until 20 years and then having the current system pick up at that point. That would give young people an incentive to stay a bit longer, to think about the ability to step out and do some other things, to have some savings built up to the military will help match, and that they don't have to simply wait until 20 years to get any benefits at all. That would change the retention profile of these talented young men and women quite a bit, I think.
General David Barno, now at American University. It's terrific to talk to you as always, sir. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much, Francis.